everyone, welcome to Anatomy of an Agency with me, Katie Traxton. This podcast shares the experiences of people in the public eye who work in the business of sport and entertainment. Whether you're looking to work with talent or for your own representation, we hope to give you honest insight into how things work. The good, the bad, and everything else in between. In this episode, I speak to founder of Glow and former marketing director of Eurostar, Emma Harris. I caught up with her to find out about all the ways in which she'd worked with talent during her illustrious marketing career.
By the end of my journey at Eurostar, I was running sales and marketing for international and UK, so running the whole thing and did a lot of stuff there. And when I left Eurostar, I wasn't sure whether, I thought, oh, I'll take a little break and then get another big job somewhere. And then literally just found out I was pregnant. Wasn't sure whether I wanted to be an earth mother or throw a nanny at my child and never see her again. So did a bit of consulting. And then sort of that ended up with me, I mean, after a bit of a squiggly time and running marketing for Virgin Holidays for a while, I ended up setting up my agency, Glow. So I'm the founder and CEO of Glow London, and we work with brands, big and small, B2B and B2C, brands you'd have heard of, Virgin, one of them. They were a big client of ours. We launched their loyalty program, Lad Bible, ClearScore, Twinings, Ladbrokes Coral, and lots of like smaller brands you've not heard of. So, and our big thing is brand. So we work with primarily looking at brand strategy, but really our big differentiator is connecting it with culture. So historically at Eurostar, my big frustration was that brand is used as a sort of pretty wrapping paper to attract people. But once you get under the skin of that, you realise that there's a disconnect between what you're saying and what you're doing, which pre-social media you kind of get away with, but now you can't. So you have to make sure that you connect the brand with the culture internally. So I spent a lot of my energy working with customer services and HR and embedding the brand into the behaviours and the DNA of the business. But there was no agency behind me helping me. Everyone wanted to spend money on advertising, but no one wanted to do what I thought was the hard graft as my job as the brand owner. So that's what Glow does. It's, you know, we help businesses really work out what matters to grow and then drive that change with sort of brand and culture as a lens.
And this is really interesting because that connection between brand and culture is actually bringing humanity to a business. And humanity, which can also be brought to life through humans.
Yes.
Can come through working with talent, which is something that you've had to do across many of those different roles. When was the first time that it kind of crossed your mind that you needed to find people who personified what you were trying to do as a business in order to connect with your customers?
I think it was certainly when we sort of, when social media launched, and realizing that the way to get that engagement was to use people that people identified with. So looking back, one of the first activations we did, I mean, when we did a big event at St Pancras, and we wanted to, I think it was our 15th anniversary.
Of Eurostar.
And we got Michelle Roux Jr. was the talent that we had. And we did a crazy, it was a bit like, don't forget your toothbrush. So we got people to turn up.
Where's that program?
It was so good. We had 150 people that had entered a competition. Can't remember what the entry process was. And they had to come to St Pancras. We had the champagne bar. We took over the champagne bar. We had Michelle Roux was our kind of celeb. And we did a competition. I can't remember what it was. Basically, we sent people on the train that day. And it was, and he was so joy, such a joy. And actually, they were sort of ambassador of ours, helping us with the first class menu. So it's a great, and we met Michelle Roux Senior. In fact, that was a great highlight. Great way to manage talent. Go to their Michelin star restaurant and have to experience a free lunch. me and the head of product had to do that.
It was a
tough
life.
Day. It was a really tough day. I mean, pairing it all with wines and everything was really tough. But you know, getting to, and you get a sense of them. So we met Michelle Junior, Michelle Senior, totally charming. You know, that's one of the things I'd say about working with talent. You've got to find people that match your values. So that's probably, I think, the first time for me personally that I went. It was such a joy. And then when we did the London 2012 activation, we did a thing called the Tri-Cityathlon, which was a swim in Paris, cycle in Brussels, and a run in London in one day. And again, we did a massive social media activation to get people to enter. We wanted people that had never done a triathlon before. So we weren't going for couch potatoes, but we didn't want everyone to be elite athletes. We wanted it to be an amazing experience. And we cast the talent. We had James Cracknell, we had Alistair Brown, who's the, you know, Olympic amazing triathlete, and his brother as well, actually.
Johnny
came as well, and we had Ewan Thomas, who's an absolute joy, and they were just in with the athletes all day, because obviously, I mean, it was quite an experience, and we were on trains getting them everywhere. And really the talent had to be the athletes that day, not the celebrities, so we had to make sure, you know, using our network, that we cast the right talent that would be all about encouraging them and giving advice. It was a beautiful day. I think when you use talent in that way to really boost and create that sort of human connection, there's nothing better. It can be a challenge. Before that, my memory, we did the Da Vinci Code. We did a charter. We sponsored the Da Vinci Code. I mean, we punched so above our weight, being this sort of tiny train, sponsoring the global launch of what was going to be like the biggest film.
Is that when you were working with Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks was there. Dan Brown was there. What's the guy that was in Wimbledon?
Paul Bettany.
And we chartered a train, which we liveried with the whole train. So imagine, it's a quarter of a mile long train that's covered in Da Vinci Code sort of, you know, livery. It was amazing. And we took it all the way to Cannes for the Cannes Film Festival. We had all the talent on board, all the stars of the film. That wasn't as easy.
So they didn't blend into your team?
No, not so much. They were in their own carriage. We had the talent in their own carriage. They were treated like gods. I mean, I wasn't so involved in that. In that process, I have to say, I remember going and sitting with them for a bit, and they were all very charming. We all had these ridiculous bags, like sports bags, that were full of Hermes scarves and Fendi sunglasses. Yeah, it was amazing. And I just remember Dan Brown's wife just walking around in slippers, she was tiny. In fact, both of them were really tiny and very cute. And Tom Hanks was lovely, but kept himself to himself. Paul Bettany was the one that was most of a laugh. But it felt like that was talent that was a little bit like, don't touch. But obviously, I'm married to talent now.
Well, I was going to say, is this how it is at home?
No! Oh, my God! I know, because people are, you know, you see it. We'll go out to a restaurant or we'll, you know, and you see people kind of looking over and their eyes, and people just think, oh my God, that's him off of the telly. And
because so, we should say, you're married to the actor Danny Sapani.
I'm married to Danny Sapani. You know, for me, he's just the guy that leaves his pants on the floor in the morning. And, you know, so for me, he's my husband. But I do, you see the cough in the background saying, I'm not just a guy that leaves my pants on the floor. But, you know, you see the reaction people have as if they're not human. And we'll be out with the kids having a lovely dinner, and people will think nothing of just sort of coming over, which I suppose is the cost of it. But you just think, do you know what? We're just having a nice evening with the kids. Can we just carry on? Rather than asking stupid questions like, how do you learn all the lines? And things like that.
I won't ask that one next time.
No, don't ever ask that. How do you learn lines? It's the worst question anyone can ask a talent.
But what's interesting here is, I guess, with something like the Da Vinci Code, in essence, you as Eurostar are partnering with the film, and then you acquire whichever talent are attached to that film.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're discussing the Tri-Cityathlon, I imagine you chose James and Ewan and Alistair and Johnny kind of independently.
Yeah.
How did you go about selecting them?
We worked with an agency, and the event agency that we worked with, I think it was IMG, we worked with them and our agency, our events agency, looking at, you know, we wanted people that was the brief, that they weren't going to, you know, be that we were going to engage. The brief we gave them is that they're there as experts to encourage the athletes. So on the it was a beautiful thing watching them on the train journeys in between. I remember this one woman who I'm still connected with on Facebook, and it was her first triathlon ever. And I just remember her sitting next to you, and she was really tired after the swim, because the swim was her weakest thing. Right. And the next was going to be the cycle. And I just remember him sitting quietly talking to her about how to find it. And then the run was in the rain. We got back to Regent's Park, and it was at the heavens opened. Everyone was knackered. And just seeing the athletes almost running alongside people really encouraged them. So that was the brief. They're not here just to be in pictures. We want people that are going to actually get down and roll their sleeves up and help people. And they were all brilliant.
And honestly, you chose some of the nicest people. The first time I met Johnny Brownlee at a triathlon event, where he was the face of the entire event, and I said, "Oh, hi, my name's Katie, I work here." He said, "Oh, hi, my name's Johnny, I'm a triathlete."
Yes. I mean, they are the most charming, wonderful guys. I bet they still remember, if you said it to them now, I bet they said it was such an epic day. I'd be amazed if they still didn't, and they must do a lot of events, but still didn't remember that day. They were absolutely brilliant. So.
And how now with Glow, as a consultant and agency to brands, if they came to you and they said, "Okay, we want to work out what our brand is about. We want to go through the entire shape of it with you, and then we want to bring it to life through people." Mm. What advice would you give them?
It starts with the brand. So when we build a brand framework, the first piece we do is sort of unpicking what I call peeling back the onion to work out what makes a brand distinctive. And it's hard to create real differentiation in the world at the moment. So, you know, it's usually about what really makes you different. What's the special sauce that makes people want to work with you or buy from you? What's that differentiation? And then, so if you're going to work with talent, let's make sure that that talent reflects. Part of that is always values. So let's make sure the talent reflects that. And also that they are people that the customers, if it's a B2C business, that the customers are going to be able to relate to. So we're big fans of using micro-influencers rather than big sort of famous, particularly in B2C brands. I mean, people no longer trust brands, the voice of a brand. I mean, there's so little trust now between consumers and any sort of corporate world. And since, I mean, going back to kind of, you know, the expenses scandal in the government, the banking crisis, increasingly that trust has eroded with customers. But they trust other voices, they trust other consumers, which is why sort of, you know, we're big fans of using UGC to help promote that sort of sales funnel process. And micro-influencers are good because they're usually kind of normal people that have grown quite a following, and then you pick them based on, you know, what they're known for and get them to promote the brand or the product, but in a genuinely authentic way. So that kind of whole, I mean, there's a whole world now of what they call creators, who are people that are not what you would necessarily call existing talent. And you've just got to make sure you pick them really well based on what their following is, what they're known for, you know, make sure they're trusted, and that what you're doing with them isn't just a commercial deal, that they actually believe in the product that you're selling.
And that, for the non-marketers listening, so UGC is user-generated content,
yes,
which basically means they're filming themselves, so it looks more authentic, it feels more real, they can connect with people better because it's more relatable.
Yeah.
But what do you do when you're, this may not have happened, but I'm sure you've seen it happening elsewhere, when your client comes to you and they say, "Well, look, this thing's trending," or, "Well, I hear we should be using diverse talent, let's do that." Mm. How do you explain to them, "No, you really need to peel back here to what you're about and what you're trying to achieve"?
I mean, I would never say don't use diverse talent. Let me say that, because as you know, I'm a big advocate for making sure that people, you know, see themselves in the world. And that means we do need to look outside of our sort of classic pale male and stale decision makers reflecting themselves. If they're working with us, they would understand, you know, they've brought us in because we're people that really understand how to build a brand. And if they've bought us, they're on that journey with us, and we're about, the brand has to live everywhere. This is not something that sits in marketing. Once you've built this beautiful thing that's really clearly defined what your point of view of in the world is and how you bring that to life. It's got to live everywhere. And it can't just be something that lives on a website or in an advert. It has to be how your people show up for work every day, how you're talking and communicating internally, how you're touching customers, how you're thinking about your product development, your strategic approach, everything. It's the lens to look through for everything. So talent should just be part of that. So that it would be insane to have this beautiful thing in a really clear brand positioning and then find, because that talent's really popular, let's work with them. So I'd hope if I'm working with them anyway, they would listen to us on that.
And if you've got an ambassador, in theory, they should be running through all those touch points anyway.
Absolutely.
Now, talent are so well known as household names that they are their own brands.
Mm.
But it can be so tempting, particularly if, you know, most people who rise to fame don't have a back history in working as a marketer. So when they're trying to create their own brand, it can be quite tempting to create what the people want.
Mm.
What advice would you give to an individual who wants to bring themselves to the world, might not want to share everything because they're allowed a personal life, a private life, but they also want to be able to connect authentically?
Mm. I mean, I always approach personal branding the same way as I would a business brand, which is actually helping talent or an individual find out what's really important to them. So the sort of process we'd go through is, you know, starting with the question, kind of what gets you up in the morning? A great question I love asking when we're doing personal branding is, if you're up in an aeroplane, you know, when you're flying, you get this really emotional, I get really emotional when I'm flying, because you're sort of above the earth and you can look down on it, see how small it is. And a great question to ask yourself is, what's the point of me being on this planet? You know, when you get that kind of distance and that objectivity, what's the point of me on this place that I live in, that I exist in? And really understanding that is actually, what do I want to achieve in the world? What is the point of me in this world? And once you understand that, and we all have that, and it could be something as about helping other people or about changing something. It's usually some kind of energy that takes people forward that makes them bother. And once you kind of define what that thing is, then stick to that. Because in the same way as we advise our brands, you've got to find out what the point of view is and what you stand for and keep saying it again and again and again. As you know me, the last few years, I mean, for years I've talked about human performance and people living a life more meaningful and being able to fulfill their potential. That's my thing. I just want everyone I touch, I can be in a lift with someone for 10 seconds and find a way to somehow enhance their life.
And people might not believe it, but people get out of the lift and say that you've changed their life. This is true.
And so, and doing that is something I do. It's become who I am. As you know, I run a movement called Slow the Fuck Down, which is about helping people live more meaningful lives. It's not about doing less. It's about being better, living a world where you really prioritise your mental and physical well-being in order to do more and be happier. And it's... So I don't then, you know, I could get very distracted by talking about gender equality or diversity. They are subjects that matter to me. But really, when I hear people talking about mental and physical well-being or workplace culture or decision-making or burnout, that's my thing.
Yeah.
So I would say to a talent, be as authentic to yourself as you possibly can. Because again, with social media, you know, we can no longer afford as people to say one thing and do another. So the more authentic place that you can find to present yourself, the more likely it is that you can follow that through in your behaviour. So yeah, don't chase the money. I would say that to our clients as well. Because brands that are true to themselves, and the same with people, are the ones that are polarizing. You know, when Colin Kaepernick took the knee, Nike supported him and people were like burning their trainers, and Nike said, fine, we don't want you buying our trainers,
because Nike know who their customers are.
They know who they are. And it's the same thing with personal branding and talent. Know who you are and stick to that. I mean, that's a really good question that people don't ask themselves enough. That it's, what do you want to do in 5 years, 10 years? What do you want your legacy to be? And I think that kind of from the aeroplane looking down on the planet, it's a similar energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you want when, you know, I nearly left the planet early. Thankfully, I didn't. I'm still here. But had I left the planet at that time, would I have been happy with my legacy? I think I'd be happier if it happened now. And I think that's the thing. Life is short. So think about what you want to leave behind.
What an interesting thought to end on. Well, I know what my legacy is going to be. It's going to be this podcast. So you need to help me make it better. Get in touch at Good Vibes Only Talent on social media and let us know what you think. And please, please listen to other episodes with our fantastic guests. Other than that, from me for now, it is goodbye.